I recently had a deep conversation with Charlotte James from the Ancestor Project, where she shared her first combo and first bufo experiences with me, and she talked about how she purged self-doubt and embraced more acceptance and love for her body. Charlotte has been a harm reductionist and psychedelic explorer for over 10 years, but she left harm reduction because of rapid burnout. But she returned to this work with a renewed energy thanks to the power of healing with sacred earth medicines. She works to create a world in which everyone is able to live in fearless pursuit of their radical transformation. Charlotte's skills as a digital strategist, coach, and space holder help her to build and engage a community focused on pursuing equitable liberation. I hope that you enjoy this episode as much as I did, especially as Charlotte told me about her experience with nudism. Enjoy the conversation. It's time to upgrade your life. Welcome to the Conscious Evolution Podcast. I'm Dr. Andrea Pennington, Chief Psychedelic Officer for Innate Vitality. In this podcast and our live events and retreats, we explore ways to hack enlightenment by integrating ancient wisdom and modern neuroscience with transpersonal psychology. From plant medicine and psychedelics to breathwork, mindfulness, and neurofeedback, my guests and I will shine a light on the unique capacity that we have to use our conscious mind to evolve individually and collectively as a species. Tune in each week on your favorite podcast player or the Pennington Media YouTube channel for interviews and discussions about holistic healing of trauma and adverse childhood experiences, burnout recovery, and intentional wellness. Charlotte James, thank you so much for joining me for this special edition of the Conscious Evolution Podcast. So grateful to have you here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Well, this is an exciting time to be part of the psychedelic renaissance. And you know, I know we all call it the renaissance, but I've heard you and the co-founder of the Ancestor Project, Dre, who's also on this podcast, you know, you've talked about sacred earth medicines, as you guys refer to them as. They've been around for hundreds, if not thousands of years. So we call it a renaissance here in the West, you know, we Westerners, but this goes back to our ancestors. Tell me a little bit about your journey, though. How did you get involved in psychedelic medicine, in serving combo at ceremonies? Talk to me about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, first off, for having me on the podcast, and also just want to show deep gratitude to the ancestors and the spirit guides and the allies and the relatives that cross all of our paths and intersect us when we need. My relationship, my intentional and conscious relationship with medicine is the more recent part of my journey. I started smoking cannabis when I was 14, and my first time smoking was actually very challenging and not super fun, but it was fun enough that I was very curious and I wanted to come back to it. And so that was my first medicine love, was cannabis, and that really supported me through my early years when I was dealing with generalized anxiety but unaware of it or without the language for it. And then when I got to college, at that point, like, my mind was pretty open. I come from a background, my mom was a hippie, my dad was a Rasta, he immigrated from Jamaica, and they were very open about having had a relationship with cannabis. So that was plants, nature, my mom's a horticulturalist, was just a part of the everyday deal. I also went to Quaker school my whole life, so service to the community, integrity, simplicity have been pillars of my socialization and my upbringing. So by the time I got to college, I was very open-minded still to the idea of expanded consciousness, very curious about it, always been a seeker. And so when the first opportunity to try MDMA came across my viewpoint, I jumped on it and said yes. And so my introduction into the world of psychedelics is really through the rave and burner scene. And so I was always in some type of collective. Like I was always partying in a community. There was always this sort of, and then, you know, this was like the height of the EDM boom when MDMA was really big in the party scene. So then like you're generating feelings of openness and love. So it like increases the sense of community that you have even in these really like short touch points of spaces like a rave or a festival or a burn. That took me through my early 20s. I moved to Bolivia. I lived in a community there where we did a lot of LSD together and would go on these epic hikes. We called it deportistas psicodélicos, so like psychedelic sports people. And we would like go on these big hikes and then come back and have these big meals in our shared home. So this is like, has always been a pillar of my psychedelic use, has been in community. But at the same time as that LSD exploration, I was also dipping into substances that have been less supportive on my path and my growth, namely alcohol and cocaine. And so I kind of like drew myself off my path in that time. Like I was almost there with the LSD. I was like, okay, I'm seeing it, I get it. And then I like distracted myself. So I came back to the States, I cut everything off. Like I realized I was not in a healthy relationship. My anxiety was wild. I was not in a good relationship, good workspace. So I just cut everything. And then someone in my co-working space started talking about mushrooms and that they had mushrooms and, you know, they were making mushroom chocolates. And so I like started to dip my toe back in. And then in my group of friends, I was the only person who had ever done psychedelics, like a group of mainly BIPOC folks. And so it was one of my friend's 40th birthdays. And she asked if I would like, you know, not lead, but like be the point person for this birthday trip to a cabin in the woods and if we could do some ritual. So she really brought the ritual piece. I brought the medicine and we went from there. It was a really beautiful time. That's when I started to like, it started to click, this like medicine community. This has been a part of my life. How do I bring this to other people? And then, yeah, I was in my co-working space and that same person had combo marks. The same person who had the mushroom chocolates came in with combo marks. And I remember seeing combo on National Geographic when I was 15 years old.
Oh, wow.
I was like, I think I know what that is. And they start to tell me a little bit about it and this journey that they had with Combo and with Bufo and da da da. And I had just read an article about the intersection of race and psychedelics. And I made a flippant comment that they probably went to some white shaman. And they're like, no, I went to this guy named Dre. And so they connected me and Dre. And I sat in my first combo ceremony and did some other medicines. And from there, just like naturally unfolded into building the Ancestor Project together, into me apprenticing in combo and now serving alongside Dre. So it was just a natural progression, but it is like a 12-year arc that got me to this, in this phase. It's a whole lifetime and lifetimes before. But in this, like in this chunk, it's really, I mean, since cannabis, 16 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Gosh, thank you, Charlotte, for giving me the overview. Cause I know parts of your story. I've sat in a couple of your BIPOC integration circles online, but I hadn't heard all of the backstory. And I'm really impressed by how much community has been a part of your experiences, even before it was quote unquote intentional or conscious use. So I get now why you and Dre joined forces. You're doing things in community and hosting ceremonies. So I want to jump to something that's somewhat controversial. So I know that you and Dre are doing a doctorate program along with a very good friend of mine, Soul Whitefire. And I'm currently doing a certification fellowship with IPI and MAPS. And so when you're in the study of psychedelics and the ethical use and all of these things, there's so many conversations that are going on right now that I want to jump into. And before we get to the most controversial one, I want your perspective on festival use of psychedelics. Because there's some purists in the world of psychedelic-assisted therapy who feel like, you know, festivals are just, you know, they're just, you know, let everything fly and go, and it won't be necessarily therapeutic for you. It, of course, could be dangerous because you may not know what you're getting. But it sounds like you've had a lot of experience with festivals and in community and out in the woods. What is your opinion on the use of psychedelics in non-therapeutic, like non-clinical settings?
Oh, I'm not a fan of clinical settings. So I would like put that to the side. Yeah, I think this idea that psychedelics are only supportive in a therapeutical clinical setting is a narrative that's pushed by the medicalized world and by the pharmaceutical companies that are synthesizing all of these sacred medicines into molecules, which I don't have an issue with. This is why I talk about sacred earth medicines. LSD, MDMA have been a big part of my journey. So I'm not a purist in that sense either. Like, I'm not a plant medicine purist. So festivals, I think the social and celebratory use, which a lot of people would say recreational, but thanks to actually a good friend at MAPS, I have shifted my language from recreational to social and celebratory, is just as important. It's certainly something that our ancestors worked with. And I personally, in my journey, have certainly benefited from being in those spaces. And I would say that's one of the ways in which I trained myself before I entered into apprenticeship or a training program, was that I had to hold space for myself through challenging experiences in uncontrolled containers. And that has been hugely beneficial for me. There are absolutely, you know, my background is also in harm reduction. And so there are absolutely steps that I would take these days. And one of the reasons that I stepped away from the party scene and the rave scene was because I wasn't practicing harm reduction in my own life. So I was taking myself to burnout. So I would say, you know, test your medicine, have a plan, make sure you're hydrated, make sure you're getting rest. Like, there are ways to support yourself better in a festival setting. But yeah, I'm a big advocate of social and celebratory use of medicine as well. I don't think that's great for everyone, right? You also need to like check in on your own mental health and all of these pieces. But if you put a little bit of intention into it, like you can put intention into social and celebratory spaces. You can make an intention to be connecting with the medicine, to connect with play, to connect with joy, with movement, right? Like things that are great in a festival setting and that are great in a natural setting. So yeah, I'm still integrating those experiences. I think that's the other piece of it, is like giving yourself the time and space. That's part of the harm reduction as well, to integrate, to have your brain chemistry reset, all of that. But those were absolutely a huge, huge part of my path in getting to where I'm at now. And I don't see it as linear. So I go back to that space as well. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for sharing that. I definitely had my eyes opened, because my introduction to psychedelics was in my teenage years, and there was nothing intentional or sacred about it. It was definitely recreational. And so this pivot to social and celebratory, I've heard people who've been to raves and been to Burning Man, and they said it was the most transformational experience for them. And I heard someone else say that she stepped into a new level of confidence with the help of, you know, the psychedelics she took at this event. And yeah, I can definitely see how being at a place where you feel safe and comfortable and can move and dance, it can add to that shift in confidence, and it can be an important part. I'm a physician who has been in people trauma addiction for 20 years. So I came with a very medical background, and because my patients struggled with addiction, at first I was like, oh my God, no, I wouldn't want them off on a tangent doing it. So, I mean, it's like what you say, everyone needs to check themselves, check your mental health, what is your particular core makeup and family history. But I'm grateful for your sharing on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, with addiction, this is a really interesting, the harm reduction work I used to do was in the opioid response space in Baltimore through needle exchange programs and Narcan overdose prevention trainings. And we have some folks as well who come to our circle who have gone through 12-step or have a past with substance use disorder. And what I've heard is that it is helpful, the ceremonial or context or the clinical, like having a framework is helpful. So I agree with you in that, as I said, like the social celebratory may not be suited for everyone. But I do think it's important that we don't just like write it off as a party scene.
Yeah. And how would you suggest someone who's new to psychedelics or new to combo, I'm going to ask you to describe your combo experience and tell us a little bit about what combo is, because it's not our classical psychedelic, but it's included in your sacred earth medicine. But what would you say for someone who's curious? Now they've seen the hype, they've seen the movies, they've seen celebrities coming out talking about how it's helped them with addiction and PTSD and recovering from sexual abuse. Like it's out there and people are seriously considering it. I know that all of us talk about integration, which I think is 100% should be on everyone's list, but I'm a big believer in preparation before you even get there. So what's your take on preparation? How would someone who knew prepare?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I see preparation and integration as an ongoing cycle that are interconnected. They can't really have one without the other. For a person that's never sat with medicine, so what I'm seeing a lot is because of the hype, because of the media hype around it, is that people are losing their discernment a little bit. So there's like an excitement to try something new that's purported to have all of these benefits and et cetera, et cetera. And then there's like a willingness to compromise personal safety or integrity just to be able to get to the medicine. So my first suggestion would be to be patient. Like if this is something that's starting to come across your field, that means that the medicine is calling you in and the opportunity will arise. But what we're so used to doing is like forcing things and like planning and figuring out all the pieces. And, you know, as I said, in my journey in this arch of 16 years, it took until year 12 to have an opportunity to sit in a ceremonial context or in a guided context. So that's one piece. And then the other is really getting clear on what you're willing to give up in this journey, like what you're willing to let go of. I think a lot of people will step into it wanting to fix, quote unquote, fix or change or try and cure whatever DSM-5 diagnosis and pathology that they have been given by a medical institution, or they want to cure their addiction or whatever it is, and are not necessarily prepared for all of the other things that will come up in order to address the anxiety, the depression, the PTSD, the addiction, right? Like those things are just a symptom of your trauma. And so you're going to have to deal with the source fracture of the trauma in order to alleviate the symptoms. And because, again, we're getting into this very medicalized language around it, there's this idea that it is a magic pill. I'm going to go to this one session. I'm going to have this expansive experience. And there's going to be stars and unicorns and divine energy and all of this. And I'm going to walk out a new person. And the reality is that frequently, like that first day after a ceremony, is actually incredibly challenging. The ceremony itself may be incredibly challenging. We have someone in our community, and I remember after her first ceremony, she was like, how do y'all live in the world? Like, how am I supposed to take this, especially as a Black woman, and go live in the world with this? And you're like, yeah, that's the integration. Like, that is the crux of it. So I think just, like, really preparing yourself to really question everything that you know to be true. And for some people, that is a great place to be. And then for other people, that's really disjointing and it can become increasingly dissociative. And so it's important that we are open and honest about the challenges and difficulties and the joy and the beauty so that people are able to make an informed decision. I've seen in the last week a few more folks in the psychedelic space starting to sort of come out with these almost cautionary tales of like drinking the Kool-Aid way too hard and going like psychedelics is the only thing and it's going to fix all the things. And it's, you know, and then finding themselves in a place of increased mental distress because they're not moving through the process with gentleness and kindness and respect for themselves and a really strong focus on the day-to-day embodiment, which is the integration of the lessons that are being received.
Yes. I know for me personally, the first time I sat with ayahuasca was in 2017, and I didn't come out public about that. It was just for my own journey, but I'm still integrating things from then. I have since sat multiple times with the medicine, but I know that I have seen people and I've experienced for myself miraculous things that have come through sitting with these medicines, but it's by no means an overnight fix. So tell us about your first combo and we should all let first for those people who have not seen or heard the podcast that we did with Dre about combo. Give us just a little background on combo is and what an experience is like and what was your experience like? Why did you make this commitment or did the frog call you into this new commitment to sit in ceremony and to serve?
I mean, I feel like it called me in when I was 15 watching National Geographic being like, ooh, what's that? This is what I mean, like the ancestral breadcrumbs. This is a beautiful thing that the medicine can do. You'd be like, that was because of that. Okay, I see what y'all were doing for the last 28 years, 30 years of my life, right? And before that, I'm sure. So combo is another reason why we talk about sacred earth medicine, because as you mentioned, it is not a psychedelic. It is an emetic medicine, which means that it causes a deep physical, mental, and spiritual purge. It is a physically intense journey, in that in order to apply the medicine, we have to open gates on the skin, which is done by a surface burn with an incense stick. And then we apply this secretion from the frog onto those open gates. And it's a blood-brain barrier passing medicine. So it goes into your lymphatic system, causes your immune system to respond. So it's a really beautiful immune boosting medicine. It was actually originally used as a vaccine at a community-wide level during a pandemic. And yeah, within 5 minutes, you may start to feel your heart rate increase, get a little hot, a little uncomfortable. You might feel sort of like physically weak. And then you start to feel nauseous. You've also you drink a good amount of water during the process. And so you start to feel nauseous and you start to purge that water into the bucket. And really, more than just the physical cleaning, it's also like purging this story out. So we do a lot of prep work with people around what are the habits, behaviors, ideas, or even people and places that no longer serve you that you're excited to let go of. And that's what you're letting go of into the bucket. And then the integration period is what you are opening up to and what you're allowing and welcoming into your life. So my first combo ceremony, I feel like this is a common thing for folks, but after that first one, you're like, I'm never doing that ever again. It was really helpful for me. So in the preparation, so after having my first conversation with Dre, I was like, great, I'm not ready for that. And I need to get on my practices so that I can actually, like, if I'm going to do something that is this challenging, I need to get myself in a place where I'm ready to receive it and actually use it to start transforming my life. And I wasn't in that place. So I scheduled a session, but for like 3 months out from when we met, and I started to put myself on like a meditation schedule. I started to work out more. I did like a month long dieta of no meat. So I like did all plant-based for the month before I sat. What else? I just started to shift my practices so that after the journey, I was able to continue in and build on those practices that I started in my preparation. But yeah, my first ceremony, I, along with generalized anxiety, at one point was also diagnosed with body dysmorphia. So I definitely, when I'm not in my highest frequency, attempt to probably disconnect or ignore the needs of my body, even though it's something that's like constantly present and I'm always thinking about it, but I'm not taking action on it. So for me, combo is really intense because it puts you like straight in your body. Like there is no avoiding it. It is very body-based. It is very somatic. And it really started to open this door of repairing that relationship for me, because when I was done, I was like, oh, can I curse on this? I was like, oh shit. Like I just did this thing that was really fucking hard, like really hard. Like I first off went and trusted this person, and then I had rapé for the first time. And at that point I was like, oh, I'm out. I'm not staying for this. Like, blew some crazy stuff up my nose. Rapé is a sacred tobacco medicine that we work with, also not psychoactive, for grounding and clearing the mind. But I remember it was like the physical sensation was overwhelming, but my mind was blank, like in a way that it had not been in. I could not remember a time that it was like that, where it was just like blank slate. And I still refer to rapé as my blank slate medicine, because it just like quiets it down. So once I was able to like settle into that, but then the Sananga comes, which are these eye drops that we work with that sting very, very much. So then it's like you settle from the rapé a little bit, then the Sananga comes, then you got to drink all this water, then they come and burn you and put this medicine on you, and you're hot and uncomfortable and all this stuff. So that happened, and I was really proud of myself. You know, I was really proud of myself. We went and got some vegan food and hung out.
So what do you think you purged in that? You said that normally you tell people that they're going to let go of people, places, habits, emotions, thoughts. What did you purge?
Self-doubt, a lot of self-doubt, a lot of mistrust in my body, and not completely. These are not things that like don't ever come back up for me. But I'm at least now able to be in the observer role and say like, oh, I see you trying to throw me off the things. And like, I have empathy and compassion for that part of myself, and I don't need to sit in it or allow it to take over. So definitely that first one was a lot of that. I've also served myself combo as part of my training. And so that was like the next level of self-doubt. Like first was like, can I even sit through things like this? Then it was like, can I, you know, it's one thing when somebody else is helping you like move into the discomfort. It's another thing when you have to cause the discomfort to yourself. So like sitting there and burning yourself is like very counterintuitive. And so that was like the next piece of self-doubt as a practitioner that I needed to purge out. So I think, you know, the journey is much like a spiral that goes up, I imagine like that. And like, you come back to some of the same points, but like from a new vantage point and with new tools. My relationship to my challenges with my connection with my body or whatever are in a different place now than they were when I started the journey. I also feel like combo is just a massive path opener, and I see this for myself and also so many of the people that we have supported in our community, that you'll look at where they were a year ago and where they are now that they've sat with combo. And it's just like this massive blasting open of this idea of like, oh, like all of these things are possible. I can do hard things. I feel like that's the huge lesson of combo. It's like, oh, I can sit through discomfort. I can come to the other side. I can, you know, gain beauty from the pain. And that realization really helps take us, I think, also out of a victim mentality and into a more empowered place of like, oh, I can also choose hard things for myself and get through them, and it will make my life better. I love seeing like the unexpected people who have come to sit in ceremony, because I have been open about my journey with this medicine. Like, as you said, combo is not one that is typically in the list of medicines that people are familiar with, people choose or sit with. But I think once you're able to see those examples in your community of how these medicines support a change, then it's like, okay, this person clearly made it through a hard thing. Like, I can make it through a hard thing. And then just watching those people move on to the next parts of their lives. It's been really definitely a privilege and an honor in that respect. But it did take me from that first ceremony to the second. There was like a solid 2-3 months in there where I was just like, oh, nah, not happening. But Dre could see, and he'll say this like from the beginning, that he knew that I was going to apprentice. So he kind of didn't let up, and not in an aggressive way, not in a convincing or forceful, but just in a reminder of like, no, you did that. Like, you heard that call, you answered it, you made it through. So like, when you're ready, you know, we'll like keep moving in that path. And so he did give me the space that I needed to do my integration. And then when I was ready, I came back and I was like, all right, let's do this. And then I did, you know, a couple in a row. And then started, you know, just spending more time together, spending more time in ceremonial space, and then starting to help him in assisting. It worked out well because the pandemic hit. Like, I did my first one, there was a couple months, then the pandemic hit. So then we could kind of like isolate, and I could focus in on my work when we were not serving other people because of the pandemic. And then we got to a place in the pandemic where it was like, okay, we could do one-on-ones with people and I could assist in that. And so that was just like the natural progression of it.
Well, I'm glad you were able to tell us a little bit about your revelations with yourself and your body and becoming the witness, because at first blush, when you first talk about, you know, all the uncomfortableness, and you don't even get the little pretty visuals with most psychedelics, it's like, wait, why would someone do it? But I get now.
it is true. And people are like, sometimes also people will be like, so when are the visuals coming? And we're like, no, we talked about this. There are no not getting cuteness with this one. There's none of that. Soon after my first combo, sat with Bufo for the first time. And I think that also, like, I would say combo is also a great path opener in the sense that it's a real clarifier. So, like, if you're not sure what you need to be looking at in your psychedelic journey or what your intentions are, or it's like an emotional purger. Like, sometimes people will ask, what are the days after combo like? For many folks, it is like a continued emotional purge because you have your nervous system has been relaxed, your dopamine and serotonin have been boosted a little bit, your mind is a little quieter. And so now there's this space for a lot of the things that you've been like burying, ignoring, distracting yourself from to come to the surface. And which is can be really helpful then for going into the more visionary journeys to say, okay, like this is something that I hadn't thought about in a long time, looked at a memory that's resurging that I want to explore deeper, and then going into a medicine ceremony to do that. So having Bufo soon after was an interesting contrast of being very body-based, earth-based medicine combo, and then very like out to the ethers Bufo. So it was also an interesting juxtaposition.
Yeah, so tell us where do we classify Bufo, and tell us what's coming from. This is again from a frog, or actually a toad. Tell us about Bufo.
So Bufo comes from the Bufo alvarius toad, the Sonoran desert toad. Also a secretion that comes from their glands that contains 5-MeO-DMT, different than NN-DMT. Frequently people will talk about DMT as being hyper-visual. You'll hear people talk about like the machine elves, which is something I have yet to experience in my life. 5-MeO-DMT is like source connection medicine. I think that's a good descriptor. It is a very quick journey. And it helps to bring us back into wholeness, I would say. It like takes you out of the dual consciousness, like the experience of being separate from everything else and becoming just one with everything, which I think is a really powerful, I think it could be a really powerful medicine for the time that we're currently in, like this time of hyper separation, though it is the way that that happens is one of the most intense processes. There isn't really like an option of surrender, in at least in my experience. I just remember being like, oh shit. And just like gone. So I think that is the challenge, right? Like there are some people who the preparation that's needed for 5 or 4 Bufo for some folks needs to be really in depth because it can be this complete shattering of the self. There's some folks who work in Mexico that we collaborate with that have a 5-MeO retreat because the frog, they're the toad now, the Bufo toad is very endangered because there has been this huge boom in interest in this medicine and it is still a controlled substance. And so the way that it's harvested is not like in right relationship with the toad population, with the earth, or in any type of reciprocity. So a lot of folks are working with the synthetic 5-MeO-DMT. But yeah, these folks in Mexico that we work with describe it as a grenade to the subconscious. And not everyone is looking for a grenade to the subconscious, especially in the early parts of their journey. So yeah, you have to be definitely careful about how you share that medicine. But it is, yeah, definitely one of my strong allies.
So interesting. I haven't heard a call for that one just yet. But, you know, I'm open. We'll see.
I think I, you know, because my journey started in a non-ceremonial context, there wasn't a lot of conversation about, like, hearing the call. It was kind of like, we're going to the rave. We're doing Molly, you know? And so for me, when things show up for me, like serendipitously, that for me can be the call as well. Hmm. So for example, I just received a scholarship to go sit with Iboga for the first time. And
wow.
That in July, it's an 8-day retreat with 2 full flood doses of the root bark. So not ibogaine, but actually Iboga. And again, like 15, 16, saw on Vice, or National Geographic, whatever, some documentary about seeing people go through Iboga initiation. And I was just like, noted someday and tucked it. So when the scholarship came up, I didn't apply for it. I didn't ask for it. I did nothing. It was just like someone in the community who's seen the work that I'm doing and was like, I feel like this would be a gift for you. Would you like this gift? I said, yes.
Wow. Because,
you know, like, I'm not gonna, for me, that is Iboga saying like, okay, bet, here it is. And either you say yes or you don't. So I decided to say yes.
And what country are you doing that in?
I'll be going to Costa Rica. Part of our training is that we'll be going to Gabon at the end of the 3-year training program to do Iboga initiation. Wow. And I feel like it's important before going, at least for me in my process, before going to Gabon to sit and meet the medicine before going to be initiated in a tradition. Mm-hmm. So
makes good sense. I mean, that's what would have happened if you lived in Africa anyway, right? You would have experienced it before. Yeah. So just to explain for the newbies here, the psychedelic curious, how do we classify Iboga? You mentioned it's from a bark, and traditionally we've seen, as you saw, whether it was Vice or Nat Geo, you know, like big plug for documentaries out there. So I come from that world, but yeah, we've seen that there are rites of passage. There are all sorts of rituals and ceremonies that happen in various countries in Africa using Iboga, this plant bark. So talk to us about the neurochemistry. What is it? How does it differ than the others?
So Iboga is not a psychedelic, but I'm completely blanking on what it is classified as right now. I believe it starts with an O. This is a medicine that I have my intentions, which may shift after this time in the jungle, since we're going to Ecuador next week, from the recording of this. So I have my intentions and very little expectation. I can say why I said yes to this, which I feel like might be helpful instead of me talking about a medicine that I'm not an expert in, not that I'm an expert in any of these medicines. It comes from a root and the bark of the Iboga tree. It is used predominantly in present day Gabon and the Congo with groups that would have been classified as pygmy. That is not the term that those ethnic groups identify with. Some of the tribes, though, are the Aka, the Baka, the Mbuti, that are all these central African tribal groups. They work with this medicine. It's deep, like soul retrieval medicine and remembering and ancestral connection medicine.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
I said yes to this scholarship and this team of people because I have a deep respect for their process and their practice. They're all Bwiti initiates who have done a lot of work in Gabon. This ceremony protocol is advised by their elders in Gabon. And a number of the people on the team are medical professionals, and it's in like a more retreat setting in Costa Rica with clinical medical support. So Iboga is a medicine that does have a risk of fatality when not managed well. And so I'm really grateful to have the opportunity to sit in a space that is not just a clinical setting. Like, it is informed by and guided by Bwiti tradition and Bwiti initiates. And it's in a more sort of comfortable setting than traveling 2 days into the bush in Gabon, which is what we will do in 2 years. So mm-hmm. I was like, I will take this. I'm not a huge fan of the clinical, but it doesn't feel clinical. And I will take the blended approach. Like, I am a Westerner. I'm a modern human being that works, that lives in an unintegrated society. And so, yeah, I will take the modern precautions for this first meeting with the medicine. Okay. Or,
well, you're going to have to come back so you can tell us all about it, because I'm so curious. But I'm also, you know, having treated a lot of substance use disorder, you know, I was really impressed by hearing how Iboga can help support people as they're withdrawing so that they don't go through withdrawal symptoms from including opioids, which is like unheard of. It's amazing. And for people to not only not have the withdrawal symptoms, but then don't have even cravings. Like, I just, and so, yeah. So, I mean, I know that there's a physiologic change that happens as well as the mystical stuff that helps people work through trauma. So I can't wait to hear about, you know, what the experience is like for you.
Yeah. And I think I'm also excited because, you know, as a person with a past and working in harm reduction, I am excited about those types of advances and, you know, the ways that we can use modern research to inform all, you know, all of the benefits of these medicines. And that's not what Iboga is used for in its original context, right? It's a rite of passage medicine. There's this African proverb about, what is the quote? If you don't initiate your young people, they'll come back to burn down the village just to see, just to get heat from the flame, essentially.
Wow.
And I feel like that's so much what addiction is. Like, it's such an isolating thing that a rite of passage can bring you back into right relationship with yourself on a physiological level. As you said, it's doing something to the brain chemistry to support not having cravings and things like that. But I feel like what's like really at work is this coming back into right relationship with yourself, with your ancestors, with the earth. But you know, one of the leaders of this ceremony that I'll be going to stepped into this work because he was struggling with opioid addiction. His wife had had experiences sitting with other medicines and learned about Iboga and the same about Ibogaine, and was kind of at like the life or death point of mm-hmm. their relationship, his issues with opioids. And so that was like his entry. But now if you talk to him about it, like, that's not a central part of how he talks about the medicine. Like, mm-hmm. it helped him in that. And then he realized that it was like about so much more than just that.
Got it.
Yeah.
Well, before we wrap up, I want to certainly circle back to some of the projects that you and Dre have for the Ancestor Project. There's online ways to connect with you. You also are serving Combo and other medicines in Baltimore and other places in the United States. But before we talk about that, can you talk to us a little bit about how you see these sacred earth medicines, all of the various psychedelics and non-psychedelics, particularly in BIPOC community? What's your positioning there?
So a lot of what we talk about is the decolonization process that you can take yourself through and we can take our communities through when we are in right relationship and intentional relationship with these medicines. I think what I observe is that the process of colonization has been really, really effective and really, really good at convincing us that we are all separate. We're in this like age of hyper individualism, like hyper over identification of self. And these medicines, I feel like sacred earth medicines help us come back into greater connection with each other, greater connection with ourselves, with our truth, and greater connection with each other. They also help to move through that, looking at the internalized depression that we all have and that we project back into the world, so that we can slowly start to like unplug people from that narrative. So I feel like, you know, in my personal journey, you know, going back to things around body, for example, or anxiety, I was really harsh with myself in that messaging, really judgmental, super critical, a lot of shame, right? And when that became too much for me, I projected that into the world. So I made my hurt other people's hurt. And when I was able to recognize that, one, I had the capacity to cause harm, it forced me to come out of a victim mindset and recognize that I had full choice over how I respond to my life. I didn't choose structural racism. I don't choose systemic oppression, but I do choose how I respond to those things on a day-to-day basis. And working with these medicines has given me more space to pause, to find compassion for myself, to find compassion for others, so that I'm able to respond from that place and not respond from a place of trauma and a place of trigger. So I see that, you know, in this, our sort of tagline is sacred earth medicines for collective liberation, and that that starts with each of our individual liberation. We didn't talk about this a lot, but the other thing that really aligned with my intentional psychedelic use is also exploring the world of non-sexual nudism and naturism.
Oh, I was going to ask you about it, but I didn't know if it was off the table.
Cause... Oh, that was off the table. No, I get naked around other people. Clearly nothing's off the table. That is something that my husband was like already into. And when we started dating, there was no way in hell I would have ever, I mean, getting naked for myself in front of a mirror was stressful. So the concept of getting naked in a place or with other people was like mind blowing, not happening. But because of the, like the love and the compassion from another person who had moved through that part of their journey and was able to share that aspect of it with me and provide some like emotional protection and literal physical protection. Also, my husband is a 6'7" black man. Like, nobody's coming towards me ever. I was able to say yes to that. And so that has also now like been a huge part of my liberation journey, and inviting other people to step into that as well is being liberated in our bodies and being liberated in existing with each other in non-sexualized, in a hyper-sexualized world, just like general appreciation for the existence of diverse bodies, right? Like, we're constantly talking about diversity in identity, but like when you just, if you just close your mouth and everybody gets naked, like there's plenty of diversity there to think about in all of the bodies that come in all the shapes and the colors and all the things and the abilities. So, that was a slight tangent on nakedness, but the point is that the purpose of colonization has been to create these lines of separation, and the beauty of sacred earth medicine is that it will bring us back into collective connection, into individual connection, and then into collective connection.
I love it. I love to hear how all of this has helped you feel personally liberated. And now you're paying it forward, you're singing ceremony, you're serving these sacred medicines and being this safe container and witness. And equally, and I have to again thank you for being so open and honest about your experiences. Because when I was first introduced to psychedelics, I didn't hear another black or brown person talk about them. I knew that it existed in South America and in Africa. But where I grew up, where I was in the United States at the time, there weren't people like me engaged in these kinds of things. So that's the reason why I'm coming out with my own story. It's why I'm hosting this series, because I recently lost someone to suicide. And I think if he had known what struggles I had already gone through, which I wasn't open about at that time, then maybe he would have at least felt a little more comfortable to talk about his depression. And if I had known that, even if we just go straight medical, that ketamine could at least interrupt suicidal ideation, then I might have had a chance. And don't worry, I'm not blaming myself for any of that. But I just know that this Black physician who died of suicide didn't necessarily know all of what's available to us, whether it's from plants or synthesized or fungi or fogs. So I want people to know it's not a cure-all, but there are millions of us who could at least have these conversations.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, another piece that I'll add in now is, like, I've also recognized that my experience being a biracial Black woman raised by a white woman in the United States with an international Black parent or an immigrant Black parent, like, greatly shifted the messaging that was in my home around quote unquote drugs, and also about, like, authority and how we question authority and that that's okay. I don't think once I got into my teenage years that my mom was really hyped that she had given me that lesson early on of, like, question things, because then I just questioned her a lot. But ultimately, it did give me the space to feel like I could explore. Like, I grew up in a house where the rhetoric was, you're not Black, you're not white, you're Charlotte, which, again, not super helpful. Like, once I got into the real world and realized, oh, a lot of the challenging experiences I've had with people along my life that I've internalized as them disliking me was actually race-based. So not super helpful in that, but, like, gave me a massive amount of space to just explore who I was without the like fear that there would be harsher repercussions for me. And so I was just like, also, are all of my early experiences were all facilitated by white folks. Like, they weren't facilitated experiences, but, like, the first time I smoked cannabis was with my white cousin. The first time I did MDMA was with my white roommates at college going to a rave with 97% white people. And so I realized early on in this phase of the journey and talking about my psychedelic use more publicly that I still didn't have those fears of repercussion that, like, allowed me to just be like, yeah, I'm sharing. Also, I'm an internet age kid. So, like, this idea of, like, sharing all your whole life on the internet is very normal to me. Less normal now that I'm in my path, but was very normal to me. And, like, the reality is that I have a light skin privilege. Like, we live in a colorist world, and for some people, I'm more palatable, and I have to accept that and recognize how I can use that to my advantage and to our advantage to be open in talking about these medicines. I gave up pretty early in this that I was going to, like, ever go and work for other people. So I'm also like, I locked my hair. I tatted my hand finally, you know, like, all these things that I've wanted to do that I've held myself back from, that I'm just like, oh, we're here. We've arrived. I'm doing all the things that I want, like, all of the things. And
yes.
Yeah. I know you also are, we have not matching, but chest tat situation.
Exactly. I am inked and most recently embracing my Native American.
Yeah, I dig
the Mohawk. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I got my dad was a Rasta. I've wanted locks since I was a child. Here they are. They're happening.
Voila.
I love them.
Voila, as you say.
So, yeah, I think, like, this ability to find liberation through being unapologetically yourself.
Yes.
Like, it comes back to that. It's like finding the radical self-love. so that you can then have the capacity to share that with others.
That's the deal.
Yeah.
Charlotte, such a gift to connect. I know that we talk all day, all night, and I'm looking forward to sitting in some kind of ceremony with you and Dre at some point. Thank you so much. Thank you for all that you're doing. I invite people to check you and Dre out online, theanswerproject.com, to find out about the preparation and integration resources when they're serving medicine in the United States and abroad. And as well, for our white folks and allies, Charlotte and Dre have a package of material that can help you learn how to be in right relationship with people in the BIPOC community as well.
Yep. Yeah. Just today, the day of this recording, is the last class of our first 10-week cohort of the psychedelic liberation training. So we'll be opening up to the second cohort later this year. And yeah, as for all clinicians who are looking to decolonize their practice, clinicians, facilitators, whatever. So yeah, would love to see folks there.
Awesome. Love what you do. Can't wait to meet you in person. Thank you so much, Charlotte.
Yes, have a beautiful day.
Until next time, you have a beautiful day. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into the Conscious Evolution Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend, subscribe, and leave us a review and rating on your favorite podcast player. This helps us get the content out to a larger audience. And to watch the video version of the podcast, visit the Pennington Media YouTube channel. Want more info on how psychedelics may improve your mental well-being, how to choose a retreat, or what to look for in a shaman? Get on the Psychedelic Curious email journal. The link is in the show notes and on my website, AndreaPennington.com. You can also sign up for my free masterclass series, where each month I take a deep dive into a topic in holistic healing, trauma recovery, self-love, resilience, and psychedelic-assisted therapy.